David Bowe's in for Jason Rantz here on 770 KTTH. It's been a long time since I've been on 770. I did Todd Herman, I think, once a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago. I feel like I'm in a time vortex anyway. No time makes any sense to me at all. People say it's Monday. I think it's Saturday. Even during the work week, it doesn't matter. I show up every day to work, and somebody will say, well, it's Friday, and I'm always stunned by it. Because such is the nature of the bizarre world that we live in right now with the lockdown and the pandemic and basically the all-round depressing news that that gets worse with every viewing. Now, I've been warned today, Jason left me a nice message, don't suck today, which, you know, it's a low bar, but I intend to get through it. And it's actually great to be back on in the afternoon because I can be more awake. Unlike in the morning with Todd, where you have to wake up so doggone early, and then you feel like a slug the rest of the time, and you're losing your train of thought like you're Joe Biden on a town hall. Now, with the afternoon drive, you can feel a little bit more yourself. The weird part and the sad part is traffic was roughly the same. Why is that? It's because Washington shut down, the economy shut down, and people are still frightened and afraid. And they're basically divided into two camps, or at least that's the narrative. And that's the narrative that a lot of people are pushing, that we're divided into two camps. There's the afraid, and then there's the irresponsible. And we're going to talk later on about why that's not really the truth, that there's not just two camps, and that there is at least one other camp, and it's probably the most important camp, and it's the one that needs to surge to the forefront and take over when it comes to policy. We'll be talking about those things coming up. We'll also speak about the Unemployment Security Fund. You know, the state says it's zeroed in on stopping unemployment fraud after initially saying, I think it was last month in April, it was, well, we got about 1.6 million in fraud. And then next thing you know, the next press conference we have, it's hundreds of millions of dollars are down the tubes. Apparently, there is a prince in Nigeria somewhere that is no longer looking for your bank account because he's already got it through your tax dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars through unemployment fraud, unemployment claim fraud, have headed off to parts unknown in a what they're calling a sophisticated crime ring, a criminal operation that is based somewhere in Nigeria. And I tend to wonder about how sophisticated it is. And I'm also wondering about the security steps that we've taken that are not yet identified because they say that it might inform the criminals. But the Employment Security Department Commissioner, Susie Levine, is absolutely stunned. She's stunned that this is happening.
But we now have sophisticated criminals attacking us and impacting that effort. How dare they?
I just love the outrage. How? Criminals? There's hundreds of millions of dollars sloshing around in the economy. There's criminals that want some of it? Who ever heard of such a thing? It's like somebody from Mayberry, RFD, showed up and is running. There's just all the shock. And I tend to think that, no offense to her, I don't know the employment security head or anything, or I've never had dealings with her, but I get the impression that a lot of this outrage and the way this fury and consternation is that she's upset and she wants you to know she's upset. But really, what it comes down to is it's a failure of her department, right? Because we all know that criminals want to do this. We have fraud prevention supposedly for this kind of purpose. Now, I heard Dory Monson on our sister station, Cairo FM, say that his name was one of those that has been used in the fraud. And I'll tell you, my name was too. I found out from my human resources department where I work at the Washington Policy Center. Hey, somebody's claiming unemployment under you. And I called the state. Actually, I called at least three times. I got through after initially it was just there's too many people calling in. They're overwhelmed or whatever. So you couldn't actually get through. And I couldn't do anything online at the time. But then later on in the afternoon, I was able to get through after a 17 and a half minute wait. It seemed like an hour because the hold music is a living hell by itself, but that's another story. There's some of the world's worst elevator music that the state's using as a loop, and I think it's designed to just frustrate people into giving up. Almost worked for me. But I got through to an employee, wasn't mad at them at all. There's no point in yelling at them, and you can tell they've spent their entire day getting yelled at, so no point there. But I had to let them know, yeah, I'm still employed, I'm okay, that's not me. And then they ask you to file a police report, which I called and said, yes, I'd like to file a report. That was 3 or 4 days ago, and still haven't heard from anybody on that score. So anyway, it's a long process.
But it's the state of Washington. Were you expecting to hear something back?
I was, actually. Such was my Pollyanna-esque naivete. I thought, you know, surely somebody will get back quick. Plus, how hard is it? You know, it should just be, at this point, with hundreds of millions of dollars going down, somebody might want to put an online filing form together, you know, do a smart sheet or something, get an online filing form together, because there's so many people now whose names have been ripped off, you might as well put it online because it's going to be too slow by the phone and we're just hiring more people. In fact, one of the interesting things about this is the Employment Security Department reporting these hundreds of millions of dollars lost while, by the way, other Washingtonians are stuck not getting unemployment benefits because, you know, of new fraud prevention measures. So somehow the criminal enterprise got paid quickly. The people who are actually unemployed are getting paid slowly, if at all. And that's where we're at. And then part of the comfort that we're supposed to take is in the news that they're hiring more people for vetting, more people for going through and security claims and fraud prevention. And I just thought, so now you're spending even more money to do what should have been done before. And I'm wondering if that was the problem at all, because we don't know, because they're not saying what the fraud prevention measures are. Said they can't, it would alert the criminal enterprise. Maybe that's right. Hard to say at this point, but they're focused on funds that can be recovered.
Now we need to focus on what we can get back, as well as how to better address those who have been impacted by this, where we are asking people to verify their identities and to get more information from them, and we need to rapidly address their needs as well. And I'm keenly aware of that and working very hard to do so.
By the way, money you can get back in this kind of circumstance is probably money like some guy down the street is ripping you off, some Washingtonian. So, you know, we're going to get back a few $1,000, maybe. It's not money that's already headed off to criminal enterprises unknown, right? So money we get back, when you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars lost, my bet is we're not getting most of that back. And by the way, that's you. Because at some point, we'll talk with Mark Harmsworth, former legislator, who's now the small business director where I work at the Washington Policy Center. I'm not speaking, by the way, on behalf of the Policy Center today, just Citizen Dave here. But Mark's been going through some research, and he's pointing out that the fund that supplies the unemployment money that you would collect if you were unemployed is draining rapidly. And at some point, we're going to have to refill it. How are you going to do it if nobody's working? You know, how are you going to do it when businesses, even those that are working, are on the brink, so to speak, and then the government comes along and says, hey, guess what we're going to do? We're going to raise your unemployment taxes because we've got all this problem. Does that make any sense? Punish the employers at the very time when they're struggling to get back on their feet? Big problems.
Typically, when people use direct deposit, we are able to pay them within 24 to 48 hours. We are now saying 48 to 72 hours.
So that may have been the reason why they were able to get so much money out of us so quickly. Just the direct deposit. So if you're a criminal enterprise, set up a quick bank account, you create the false unemployment claim, get paid quick, and there you have it. But they're working with the feds.
We are working in close partnership with federal law enforcement. It is an active criminal investigation, and they are working very hard to track down the criminals as well as the money and get that money back.
So, again, the feds can work all they want on that, but this sounds to me like one of those things where if we get any money back, it'll be shocking. The only way we'll do it is if we tie it to something and then have some kind of confiscation. But I wouldn't be holding my breath. I would be looking at this saying, this hundreds of millions of dollars have just... And keep in mind, it's easy these days especially for hundreds of millions of dollars can just kind of blank out, right? Because we're hearing now about trillions of dollars. And it's tough to put that in context, to think of what does it mean? What do hundreds of millions of dollars mean? But rest assured, you'll find out when you start shelling out more for taxes. By the way, this hour of the Jason Rantz Show is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. So there's a team, they've been pressing they've had people waiting for weeks for unemployment, and it's been a struggle.
We are looking directly at them, and I am really pressing my team, and they're doing a great job in working through, especially those that have been waiting longest. And so we will be in touch very soon if we have not already been.
I feel sorry for those folks, because remember, this is not a situation. This is not a normal situation. In fact, I've been frustrated by people talking about, you know, stimulus money. There's no stimulating an economy when people aren't allowed to work. And it's not a bailout. If the government shuts you down, creates a policy to shut you down, and creates a situation, and then pays you to address that situation, that's a compensation fund. Now, of course, there's all kinds of pork that come with anything coming out of the federal government or the state government, probably for that matter. But it is a challenge. Now, here's some news that is supposed to take comfort in.
The money will not run out. Frankly, most of the money that has been paid out thus far during this crisis has been federal money. In terms of that which is paid out from the state, we are in good shape with our trust fund.
We're going to take a look at what good shape means a bit later on in the show and see if that holds up. Remind me, by the way, to play that cut again, because I want to see if we're really in good shape here. The other thing here is when people say, well, money's not going to run out, federal government's not going to run out of money. Technically, that's true. I mean, heck, we've been talking about, spending $5 trillion in the last couple of months. I think we're not there yet because second round's not approved, but there are people that are calling for it. Money doesn't run out if you get to print more of it. But what does money do? It loses value. At some point, people start to say, wait a second, there's going to be a reckoning. You can't just print money forever. This is something that many people have never understood. They act like there's never a consequence, a real-world consequence, and that if you just printed more money, well, everybody would have more money. If you just raise the wage with a mandate of some kind to, say, $30 an hour, everybody would have a living wage. It doesn't work that way. The laws of economics are called laws for a reason. So there will be challenges, and those challenges are certainly not over when it comes to our unemployment system. Joe Biden is having some struggles. He was on The Breakfast Club with Charlemagne the God. That is not my description. That's the stage name of the individual who conducts the interview. He says if you've got and Biden's in all kinds of trouble because of this interview with Charlemagne the God. If you were listening to Michael Medved, he played a cut of it earlier on in the program. And Biden was closing out the interview.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black,
it don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community.
Now, of course, you're probably thinking what I'm thinking here. I'm wondering if Joe Biden has criteria for all minorities, or is it just blacks? Where he says he's decided he knows what you can think and what makes you legitimately black. Does he have the same? Is there some kind of list that that he has for, say, Hispanics or Asians or Jews or other minorities out there? Or can people make up their own minds? That's the curiosity. Now, if you listen to the cut, Biden sounds angry, doesn't he? I mean, he sounds angry and frustrated.
Yeah, but I also don't think Biden ever has control of his emotions. The guy just rambles.
It's a strange thing that more and more the presidency is drawing people who have no control over their emotions. Right?
He throws a dart at a dartboard that tells him how to feel, no matter what the context of the sentence has to do with it.
See, I saw this as more of the Biden the macho man. Because he's trying to kind of project this kind of, hey, man, you know, even uses the man. Hey, man, I'm Joe Biden. I'm awesome. You know, how can you question me? And then he's trying to pull a Hillary Clinton. Remember, Hillary Clinton did the embarrassing I Ain't No Ways Tired or some kind of thing where she was addressing an overwhelmingly black audience and she was trying to affect an accent. And it was embarrassing. Biden's kind of trying a kind of tough guy thing here. But if you watch the interview, it's a lot different than listening to the interview. If you watch the interview, you can see that Biden's kind of laughing at himself and he's not as angry as he sounds. He might be a little, he's defensive and he's trying to put a smile on it, but he's not as angry as he sounds. Because if just listening to the clip, you think, oh, Biden's lost his cool.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
See, that is, you have a problem, but he has an expression on his face where you can tell and then his expression immediately following, where he's trying to have a sense of humor. He's trying to be funny. But I don't think that you can dismiss the whole thing. There's been a lot of backlash for obvious reasons because here's the 70 some odd year old white guy saying what it takes to be legitimately black, which is embarrassing on its own. But it's also, by the way, a habit, I think, of leftist humor and leftist culture and leftist politics to make that claim implicitly and explicitly. It's just generally speaking, politicians don't say it. Right. At least politicians that want to stay out of controversy. But Biden manages to find a way to stumble over himself, even from the comfort of his own home. So we'll take a deeper look, a deeper dive at the Biden interview and see where his problems might lie later on in the program. The Wajimaya president. Am I saying that correctly?
Wajimaya.
But
you're close. You're right on it.
Now, it's a, as you put it, it's what, an Asian superstore of sorts.
Yeah, it's the Asian supermarket. Yeah. It's kind of Costco meets, you know, like Sam's Club for Asian products. Yeah. So they got live fish tanks, all that sort of stuff.
For good food.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Take my grandma there all the time.
Awesome. And I was about to say, so you've actually been inside.
Yeah, so I have Japanese background, and so my grandma started taking me there as a kid. And so I'm a big fan of Wajimaya.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I like any store that I can go in where it's not the same stuff that you see everywhere else. Because it's fun to explore new things.
The Seattle one's got the biggest king crab, and they're in the live tank. They're fighting. It's the best part about going there, seeing the live crabs fight.
You sold me at live king crab. I got to see that, but you throw a little fighting in there, you know, crab versus crab, and I'm there, and I need to bring my son. The CEO, Denise Moriguchi, tells Cairo 7 that a man who entered the store was upset because the store has a mask policy. And they told him to leave. And so he did, but he had to be basically removed from the presence. But when he returns...
The next day, he actually did come back with a machete, and he was in our parking lot waving the machete at people and making threatening statements.
So, you know, there's been a lot of this going on where people, not to this extent. I mean, this has mental illness smacking all over it. As a matter of fact, there will be a link to that because ultimately it turns out the individual who was arrested was from a homeless, I was about to say encampment, but it's now at the, I think it's at one of the hotels that King County's renting out for the homeless, the Red Lion.
Yeah, one of the shelters there.
Yeah, one of the shelters. Anyways, so... they've got him sheltered nearby. Turns out shoplifting and other police calls have skyrocketed in the area and have created a big problem for residents and a big problem for this particular facility. And it's been difficult for them.
It's traumatic. It's already on top of the stress of the coronavirus.
So, you know, you've got the grocery store employees have been around, you know, they've been dealing with the potential of this virus outbreak from the beginning. And now, you know, they've got some nut job waving around a machete and promising to come back to shoot people. It turns out it's because the government has decided to put people who have they're called homeless. We'll get to that in a second. They're called homeless. They've decided to put these quote-unquote homeless in this shelter nearby, and other people, other residents, law-abiding residents, suffer for it.
I think unless the shelter has more services, I think it's a danger for the community. And so I would like to see once the lease is up that it not be renewed.
Can't say that I blame her. Big challenges for them. But, you know, here's the thing. What does this prove? Proves a couple of things. One, it's the homeless problem is usually not a homeless problem. It's the homelessness is a symptom of the other problems. In this case, you've got mental illness, probably drug-induced mental illness. You've got massive drug abuse in these areas, and then the drug-inflicted or self-inflicted psychosis that goes along with those problems. And what it shows is even if you gave them, you could walk up and give them Bill Gates' house and they would be losing it shortly thereafter. You know, maybe that's a bad example because there's no way they'd pay the property taxes. But walk into any decent neighborhood with a house on a cul-de-sac and let's pretend that they could afford the property taxes at some point. If you gave it to them, it would be gone shortly thereafter because they have other issues that are causing this problem, this situation, not the homelessness. So we use this imprecise language and it ends up in imprecise policy. David Bowe is in for Jason Rantz here on 770 KTTH. In for Jason Rantz here on 770 KTTH. It is great to be back on the Rush Limbaugh station here in Seattle, and great to be with you here as we head into this holiday weekend. Although, I'll tell you, looking at the traffic, doesn't look like too many people are going too many places, and it makes me a little sad, actually. I think it's the longer you see this happen, the more difficulties. Every day I see, you know, I thought I would enjoy seeing clear traffic, and I like being able to sail through. I like having to look down and realize I need to take the pedal off the metal, so to speak, because I'm going too fast on I-5, something I never thought would happen again during normal business hours. But at this point, every time that happens now, I think of businesses being lost. I think of dreams bursting. I think of retirement plans being upended or destroyed. There's real human consequence here beyond just the impact of the virus itself, but the economic devastation and related matters. And now the state is dealing with some of that when it comes to the fraud that's hit the state unemployment, the state unemployment security department, where initially in April they said we got about $1.6 million in fraud, maybe it was 1.8, you know, chump change when it comes to government funding, right? Next thing you know, they're saying hundreds of millions of dollars gone. And the head of the Employment Security Department, Susie Levin, the commissioner, has been, you know, adamant that she's upset. She's shocked by what's happening. She's upset that that these criminals have dared attack Washington, which, you know, that's fine, but we should expect that. You know, there have been data breaches and hacks and things toward the state for some time. This is not a shocking thing, you know, at all. And she had this message that was supposed to comfort us about the money not running out.
The money will not run out. Frankly, most of the money that has been paid out thus far during this crisis has been federal money. In terms of that which is paid out from the state, we are in good shape with our trust fund.
Now, I question that, whether we're in good shape with the trust fund, even if the majority of this money is coming from the federal government. But the fact that, you know, we're not being told yet makes me wonder, you know, maybe we'll have to pay it back to the federal government because maybe we didn't take the proper steps to insure that money. There's all kinds of question marks here. But the other thing is we still have record unemployment and record claims coming in. Where does that put our unemployment trust fund? On the line with me is my colleague Mark Harmsworth, the small business director for Washington Policy Center and former legislator. Mark, thanks so much for making the time.
Thanks for having me on, David. I appreciate it.
So you've been writing for a while on the Washington Policy Center site about the unemployment trust fund, or I'm using the wrong term there, the unemployment fund, and whether or not that it's as she puts it, healthy and not going to run out of money. Your latest blog says the trust fund balance is in free fall. And when I see balance in free fall, what that suggests to me is a number approaching zero. Explain.
Yeah, so the way this works is there's two components to the unemployment trust fund. There's a federal component and there's a state component. And what the ESD, the Employment Department of Employment here, has been talking about over the last few weeks is the rate of which the state portion of that is decreasing. It started around $4.8 million earlier, $1 billion this year. That's billion with a B. And that number's been coming down steadily at about $250 million a week. Their initial report about a month ago, which originally triggered my interest in this, was that they reported that they'd spend about $950 million in 1 week without calling out the fact that part of that was the federal fund. And what's been happening over the last few weeks, we've been looking at their numbers and digging into the details. We're not getting much help from ESD to figure this out. They're being very opaque about the numbers because they really don't want you to understand how fast this thing's coming down. This week alone, they went through over $334 million is my estimate of that fund. And so based on where they thought they were on May the 1st, which was around $4 billion, we've seen a consistent $250 to $400 million taken out for the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're going to get to zero eventually, even on the state portion. And with the additional fraud that's been going on with the Nigerian scam that happened, the $200 million that we've heard that was taken out of the fund, we're going to see some significant fund balance drops here.
How fast do you see that happening? I mean, from the sound of things here, it's like, well, this is a major scandal, but it's just hitting the federal government. And, you know, I mean, if I only heard this interview with the Employment Security Department head, I would assume, you know, that basically there's no problem. I mean, we're going to be fine. But you're saying that the state money is being shelled out, and the state money will run out. What's the ballpark timeline we're talking about?
Well, if we're below $4 billion and we spend $250-$300 million. A week for the last 3 to 4 weeks, you can see we're probably below or close to $3 billion right now. So just doing simple math, it shows you that we're going to start running out of money here in 10, 12 weeks at the top end.
And so the assumption here is that, you know, when we go back to quote unquote normal, let's say we make it to phase four, and let's keep in mind that the governor has promised that there's going to be 3 weeks in between any phase for any county. Minimum, as they try to work their way, claw their way back to employment, and even phase four is not back to normal, so to speak. So then the assumption would be that, hey, everybody can go back to work, but a lot of businesses are not going to open, and are a lot of the service industry alone has just been decimated. So unemployment, I would expect, is going to stick around for a while. And that means that the scenario you will lay out of a zero balance is not out of reach of the state. What happens if the state runs out of money?
Well, as they approach the bottom line there, what's going to happen is the state will come out just like many other states, including California, has done, and ask the federal government for a loan. And the federal government will guarantee a loan. In the case of California, it was $12 billion, and they immediately withdrew $340 million. Here's the issue, though. If you borrow the money from the feds, you've got to pay it back. It's just like a bank loan. So the money will keep the fund solvent, so the unemployment checks, if ESD is actually ever able to issue these checks, because they've had some significant problems even doing that. But they've got to pay this money back. You've also got to refill the fund. So if they've depleted it by $5 billion and they then borrow another billion or two from the feds, we're looking at $7 billion, which has to be replaced. And the state's going to be looking to our small business and our businesses in our state to increase their payroll taxes to pay for that.
Okay, so that brings up the next question, which is, if we have to replenish the fund and we replenish the fund, how does that happen? Who pays? Like right now, I saw a report that the state was going to hold businesses. I mean, sorry, I don't mean to laugh as in I find it funny. I just find it rich, and it's funny only in terms of what people think they can get away with, because they want to hold these businesses responsible and use the fact that they laid people off because the government forced them to. Then they want to use that information against them when they create the new rates for the unemployment tax. And that makes no sense to me at all. It's like punishing people for following the order that they were just given.
Yeah, that's exactly right, David. They forced these businesses to close, forced them to lay off their employees because, you know, their cash flow in some of these businesses is, you know, you don't have several months in the bank just sitting around. You use it to buy your product and sell to your customers. So they're in the situation, they've had to lay the employees off. They're now liable for this unemployment tax. We're one of the only states who hasn't waived the requirement for these businesses to pay for COVID hits. And so these businesses go back to work, and then suddenly they've got this big bill due for these new unemployment taxes.
Well, one of the things I was pointing out that is that even businesses that are surviving are not necessarily surviving well, you know, because a lot of their customer base is not doing the normal things. Their clients aren't doing the normal things. You know, I've talked to people who've had businesses that are just struggling to get by. They thought they'd be okay, but because a number of their other clients went out of business, there's just a domino effect, so to speak. Then when things get back to quote-unquote normal, to then slam them with additional taxes, and when work is still going to be scarce, that's going to make it a tougher recovery. So I think we would both agree on that. What needs to be done? What should be done, Mark?
Well, we need to get back to work as soon as it's safe to do so. Rather than focusing on individual business segments and picking winners and losers and saying, okay, you can go back to work and you can go back to work, but you cannot, business C over here. What we need to hear from our governor is rules around safe implementation so that we can get back out to work. And if whatever that takes, our businesses are smart people. They know how to get their customers in and out of their place of business, whether it's retail or a restaurant. They know how to do it safely. It's been drilled into us for the last 3 months. And so we need a very light touch from our state government to help us get back to work. And we need to get into this phase two, because the sooner we get into this, the less there's going to be less load on the unemployment fund. So it reduces that drain that's happening right now. And the employers will start paying back into the fund again. So it's a double whammy. So that's really what we need to do, to get back to work as soon as it's safe to do so and have the right light touch, safe guidelines to make that happen.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. You need to stop the bleeding, and the only way to stop that is to encourage employment. And you got to rely on the ingenuity of the American entrepreneur to keep customers safe. You got to rely on the American people that are going to understand, hey, you know, people were taking precautions before the government locked down. I mean, there were businesses that decided to shut their offices in order to mitigate this. There were people who were wearing masks beforehand. So, you know, government doesn't have to handle any and all things. Mark Harmsworth, Small Business Director for the Washington Policy Center. Thanks so much for being on the show, Mark.
You bet. Thanks for having me on, David.
All right, thanks. Coming up, probably the best story I've seen, at least in the last month. Just something to make you smile. Here, David Bowes in for Jason Rantz. You're on 770 KTTH. David Bowes in for Jason Rantz here on 770 KTTH. Just using the break to catch up on the KTTH text line, 800-465-8770, if you want to text us your contribution to the show. Tommy says, great to hear you back on the air. I think the head of ESD is angry because we uncovered the extent of the fraud. At $200-plus million paid out in fraud, shouldn't the unemployment numbers be significantly less than reported? My guess is we'll find out. that'll be coming up, but I appreciate the news. It's, so far, I'm following Jason's firm wish or command that I do not suck today. That was his one message.
So far, so good.
Yeah, yeah. Worked with the man for years. He leaves me just those, what, three words. Don't suck today.
Oh, he tells me that every day. Throws things at me when I do suck. I suck every single day, so.
He's like Dale Carnegie, and I'm trying to remember that guy who was the kind of the self-help guru. Gosh, what was that guy's name? I'll think of it probably later. But he's wrapped into one. There's a great story coming out about a, I mean, first you have to imagine the situation. I mean, it's one thing to be in lockdown here. You know, a lot of people complaining, but generally it's first world problems, right? Why? Because we're in the first world. People are upset because their internet connection's not working. They didn't bother to get the right web camera now. So, you know, it's an unflattering portrait. Their Netflix is streaming at a lower quality. So instead of HD, they're getting, you know, the standard grade old school television, or they're sharing their network connection with too many people at home. They're frustrated. I get it. All those things are challenges unto themselves. But imagine being in a place like India where you have just uncounted, enormous crowds of people coming from all parts of India to work in the bustling cities where there's a chance at better jobs, at better livelihoods. Suddenly having India locked down, and these individuals who are, you know, scraping to get by, usually sending any extra money they have back to their home villages, suddenly finding themselves without jobs and forced basically to flee and get back home where their only safety net and their only hope for survival is. And many people, as soon as news of the shutdown came, started flooding out of the cities, and thousands upon thousands trying to desperately to get home. Some had been crushed by trains. You've all seen pictures of trains overcrowded, people riding on the tops and the sides of trains to move, hopping a ride because they can't afford a fare. Others have been run over by trucks because of poor roads. Others have just died of exhaustion traveling on long, hot highways. And this is detailed in the Seattle Times piece, which is just a superb story about one lion-hearted girl who had faced all of these challenges. And she succeeded where many, many others failed, and many, many others would never have tried. She faces this same situation, which, by the way, also illustrates that the choice, again, a choice we'll examine further later, isn't between those who want to stay home and stay safe and those who want to disregard all safety. It's not a choice between those who want life and those who don't, those who want safety and those who don't. There are real human costs to staying home as well. And India has suffered many of them. They don't know the numbers, but you can bet the suffering is enormous in places where people were already suffering to get by, and then suddenly find themselves jobless and trekking across the enormity of India to get back home. This young girl, 15-year-old girl, Jyoti Kumari, 15 years old, she was helping take care of her dad who got hurt while working. He was wounded. He was out of work. He could barely walk. Next thing you know, they're having their electricity shut off. They're in trouble with the landlord because now nobody can work. She can't work, and she's got to get home to her village. It's 700 miles away. They have no way of getting there. She tells her dad and her mom, don't worry. I'm going to get Papa home, and I'll get him home good. She puts dad on the back of her bicycle, which she purchases with the last of their savings, about $20, according to this story in the Times. They purchase this little girl's $20 bicycle. She puts him on the back. She starts to pedal. People are yelling at the man for having this young girl pedal him on the bike. They think it's unmanly. They don't realize he can't hardly walk and he's wounded. He also, in addition to the weight of her father, she also has their luggage on the back of the bike. And she travels 100 miles a day on average. Only once, when they managed to get a ride on a truck briefly, was she able to take a rest. But she travels 100 miles a day and makes it the full 700 miles home. And through the generosity of others she met along the way, she was able to call and contact her mom from time to time, say that she's still on the way, tell her everything's going to be okay. But she made it. She made it. 700 miles to get home and be with her family, reunite her mom and dad, and be with her village. They had to be in quarantine for a while, but that young woman has courage. She's been asked, by the way, to try out for her national cycling team, which is also awesome. And that's one of these things that we'll eventually see a movie on. This is David Bowes in for Jason Rance here on 770 KTTH.